From Sylvain Labs, welcome to Critical Nonsense. On our show, we dig deep into cultural ephemera and pose questions to each other to inspire interesting conversations. This is Critical Nonsense. This week, Joey asks special guest Hannah about catching all your neurons, and Hannah asks Joey about human smells.
Oh, hi. This is what a Joey sounds like. And this is what a special guest, Hannah Yeager, sounds like.
Hello. This is she.
And this is what executive producer and Pokemon trainer, Jess Vander, sounds like.
Hi, this is Jess.
Viridian City.
Viridian City. Viridian City.
It's not Viridian, it's Meridian.
What?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No,
I'm so
sorry. No, no, it's...
No, I'm more of a Sapphire City guy.
No, I'm going to play...
Sapphire
I
Island.
Can't. Dang it.
So, segue from Jess being a Pokemon trainer, naturally. There was a study that I think has gone into like the PR circles this week, right? Getting picked up. Probably there was a segment on Good Morning America, I would imagine. Wake Up San Francisco, likely.
Is this where you get your news?
Yes, of course.
Absolutely.
Obviously. Where else would I get it from? I miss you, Charlie Gibson. That was my mom's favorite Good Morning America anchor in the 1990s. So there's a study that came out of Stanford and potentially Berkeley, some combination, just people in Northern California hanging out, being friends, being smart, cuddling, eating granola somewhere. I imagine that's what they do in the Bay Area. And the study was by a guy named Jesse Gomez, who is studying, I think, for a PhD. And he was a real big Pokemon player when he was a little kid, apparently quite obsessed when he was like 6 years old. And he had questions about how things like, you know, intensely playing Pokemon, it sounds like he played a lot, would start to affect your brain, right? He's a cognitive science, neuroscience researcher. And so he got a bunch of people together that were... really big into Pokemon also around the same window. And what was interesting about the findings was that this was the first time that I believe that they found an area in the occipital lobe, which is the visual cortex in your brain, that was dedicated to seeing Pokemon faces in the way that you have an area in your brain dedicated to seeing human faces, right? In the way that, you know, like if you're staring at a wall and there's a texture on it and all of a sudden human faces will pop out. Potentially these people that played the game that much when they were little are having Pokemon
faces. You see like a Squirtle or a Charmander just like flashing before your eyes.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, what was interesting coming out of this and what I'm really curious about is this is a clear demonstration of technology having an effect of rewiring your brain. And this is a question that's been coming up a lot, you know, with parents and everyone being scared of technology. And we rightly have reasons to, you know, fear and moderate our technology. But this is an example of like nothing bad came of it. And I'm curious, you know, why are we so scared of rewiring our brains?
Is it that we're afraid of Pokemon?
It could be.
Who's afraid of a Pokemon?
They're so cute.
Name a scary Pokemon.
Having a hard time, but I also mostly have the first generation to refer to in my own occipital
Onyx?
Lobe. It's just a bunch of rocks, really.
Yeah.
It's just a bunch of rocks.
But even Snorlax, like he's the biggest one and he's supposed to come down and crush you, but like you kind of want to jump around on his belly.
Yeah. I mean, I think like, you know, this study in the Stanford article that came out at the end of it, there was sort of like a specific call out because I think they were anticipating this study being on Good Morning America and being like, you know, Pokemon rewiring brains, be scared. And so they were like, just so you know, all the people in this study that we found are very successful adults that we used, and while their brains were rewired, they're doing quite all right. And so, you know, the question for me is like, and I've totally fallen victim to this myself, you know, looking up like what the World Health Organization recommendation is for children being able to use screens. Turns out 1 year old. But you know, this question of us trying to like prevent or moderate our relationships with technology in such a way to like not do lasting permanent damage in some way just feels like a lost cause. I don't know.
It feels like a lost cause, but I guess in my like tinfoil hat world,
put it on.
I oftentimes fear technology like this because I'm like, what if it gets into the wrong hands? What if someone like really, like, I'm not sure how long this study took, but like, what if someone can like compress this down and like the government figures out a way to rewire brains in under like 12 hours?
Oh, is this kind of like Chuck, the super incredible television show for seasons 1 and 2, where it's like
on NBC?
Chuck Norris?
No.
The show Chuck.
The show Chuck, where basically our hero has a bunch of images flash before his mind, and he said like his brain is ultimately rewired to know all of the government's secrets, and then he, and then the computer itself is destroyed, so he becomes the sole arbiter of all of the government secrets. And so all of a sudden he'll see something and he'll have like this crazy episode of all of those things flashing before his eyes, like a Squirtle or a Charmander or whatever we see looking at walls. And then he'll be like, oh my goodness, I know who that guy is. But he's like this super dorky nerd who's really into video games, speaking of which. And it's almost sort of the joyous hilarity that ensues of that, as opposed to the really scary world that you might be describing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting about this study is that there is sort of, it highlights critical windows, which in neuroscience is sort of, in the study of the brain, there are sort of like developmental windows where you are really, you have a heightened ability to take on characteristics, and those windows close. And so like for language, if you don't learn to speak by the age of 5, your chances of learning language and speaking really fall off. Like there was sort of classic examples of this, of the feral child of D'Avignon, just like this boy who was like lost in the woods, like growing up literally out in the woods outside of civilization. And they found him when he was older. I think he might've been 12 when they found him. And he just never really developed language skills because it was just past the window. And I think in this case, they're talking about like all of the people that they found were like really into Pokemon on Game Boy, like the old like green and gray or black and white version of Pokemon when they were like 6 years old. And people who develop, who play, you know, if we started getting really into Pokemon, our occipital cortex would not start rewiring for this. So I think there is sort of like critical windows when this could happen. Mm-hmm. That said, you know, maybe you just run a lot of pictures of Pokemon in a kindergarten and then train an army of ninja assassins.
Yes.
But okay, back to the study, I guess, because why the Pokemon for the people who aren't going to read it or may eventually read it? Like, why? What is the point of using Pokemon in this study of all things?
I mean, I think they're interesting because they're sort of this, like, pseudo human substitute, right? Like they have a lot of human characteristics, right? They have eyebrows and smiles and faces that are sort of like morphologically like familiar to humans but not. And so there is sort of like an interesting aspect of that. But I think the idea of like what we're talking about also is being afraid of what's to come, right? Like my daughter's world is going to be filled with technology, and we're sort of currently like trying to stem it off as much as we possibly can. But, you know, we have like a digital picture frame in the living room, and we have a Google Home Hub. And if we're playing music, like the pictures are changing. She's seeing these things happen on these screens all the time. Or if I'm playing with her, but my wife's in the living room or in the kitchen and has like an iPad playing, there's still something over there that she's seeing. Like we can't really like shut it down. And I think what this study is showing is that your brain is sort of massive, and in terms of like the number of neurons and connections you can form, and that interesting things can happen that don't have to be wildly detrimental. Like you can be have a Pokemon specialized brain, and that's fine. Like you can turn up to be like a fully functional, successful, independent, normal adult.
Well, I think I also read the article.
Yeah.
And they used Pokemon because you held the Game Boy at least a foot away.
Yeah.
In the earlier version, they didn't move, you know, they were kind of like a static image that kind of just like moved left, right, up, down. They weren't 3D. And so that was kind of an easy experiment, I guess, that also a large number of people did. And like, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about, you know, you played a lot, Hannah, right, when you were a kid.
I loved it so much.
Do you ever like see Pokemon faces in things?
Kind of. Well, I was saying yesterday I was at yoga and there was like a box of pens and I could only see the top of the pens and they were those kind of like weird bank pens, you know, that are kind of big and have a flat top and there's usually a logo on top. And there was an R on it and I was like, oh man, Team Rocket's coming back.
Yeah.
And they got pens.
I was like, they got pens. And why are they at my yoga studio?
Yeah.
And I picked one up and it was a bank. And I was really sad.
Very disappointing.
And then I was like, oh, when you mentioned this article, I was like, is that my Pokemon brain?
Yeah.
Was that a Pokemon flex? Like
the weird sort of like reverse side of this, right? To be the skeptic in this case is that kids are starting to play Pokemon at that age because it's pretty like it's definitely a G-rated game. Like, you know, the violence is that the Pokemon go back into their Pokeballs at the end, right? Like they just go home. You lost the fight, go home. You know, like nothing bad is no one dies.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we don't mind when kids are playing these things. But I was talking to Aaron actually early this week or last week, and it was a completely different subject, but he was like, do you know what the most valuable media franchise of all time is by like a significant margin? And it's Pokemon. It's worth like $90+ billion.
That's amazing.
And like the next closest, I think, was like 50% less. It was like in the $50 billion range or something like that. And it's interesting, right? Like, if in fact we are sort of a little bit more susceptible to Pokemon because they are like cute but sort of human like, and you have an imprint on Pokemon when you're little, like then all of a sudden, you know, as an adult, you have a softer spot and you're more attuned to it and would align with it in the future, right? Like there's a, you know, in Japan, Pokemon is still huge. I mean, in the US, Pokemon's huge.
How does the live action version fit into this?
Detective Pikachu, you mean?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think?
Is that technically live action or is it CGI, I guess?
Well, like, I guess it's live action because the people are
right.
Real. But then it's sort of CG'd in.
Pikachu's not real.
Yeah. I've heard that it's a good movie. I have no idea.
I don't know if I'll be able to handle Pikachu with
Ryan Reynolds' voice.
I love Ryan Reynolds'
voice.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds is
Pikachu
the voice.
Pikachu doesn't say things other than Pika and Chu.
In Detective Pikachu, it goes well beyond Pika P.
Yeah, you can't really solve any crimes with Pika P. Like, how do you report? How do you report a crime? Pika P. Pika P.
Hey, Blue's Clues was very successful with next to no words other than. Bow, bow, bow.
Well, Steve understood.
That's right.
I think Ash understood the Pika P's.
I definitely had a crush on Ash as a kid.
Did
he
you?
He was like one of my first crushes.
Was it something about the like the hair?
I think it was the hair. Didn't
the
he have
hat.
A fanny pack?
I'm really into fanny packs.
Fingerless gloves.
It was a look.
Yeah, fingerless gloves, a hat, a trucker hat.
Yeah.
So like you were very into Ashton Kutcher also.
Yes.
Maybe it's just people named
wow,
Ash.
Ashton Kutcher was just like your imprint of Ash from Pokemon and it all came together. So now we found the Insidious side. We're all imprinted with Pokemon figures and they're just printing money from us.
Yeah, but I guess I could understand if the thing, you know, we maybe that grew up with Pokemon might see them as relatively harmless, but it's totally fair to say there's a lot of stuff available on the interwebs that are actually scary. Yeah. And if that is the type of thing that could be imprinted in your brain for a long time or like wired in there, that sounds like a real reason to be afraid.
Well, I mean, there is an interesting parallel in like the Stanford press release that one of the heads of the lab, I believe, was talking about, was sort of this idea that she saw this concept being similar to the way that we imprint on jazz, right? Like if a jazz musician, that's hard to say, is freestyling, right, but understands the grammar of music and is sort of interpreting it in new ways that still follow the grammar of music but are completely new constructions. She sees it as something sort of similar, like that person has imprinted on music over time that has like a complete structure of it. And the question is, you know, like I think we all sort of reflexively would say that imprinting on music is sort of qualitatively better than imprinting on Pokemon. And my question back is like, why? Right? Like, what is wrong with that? I think our brains are sort of these extremely plastic structures, plastic in this case meaning like extremely flexible and able to rewire and adapt. And historically, when we were in a hunter-gatherer culture, like your imprinting and orientation what might have been towards like identifying berries or seeing, you know, food on the savannah as an example. But now we don't need to do that. And so you have this feature where you're able to create like a very plastic response to the environment. And why is Pokemon, like playing a game, which is also, you know, you mentioned, Jess, like there are increasingly studies coming out that are saying like video games aren't bad for you, like all things in moderation, but there are some extremely positive effects that you can experience from playing video games of extended focus, ability to problem solve and rapid reasoning, etc. And so, you know, why is imprinting on Pokemon faces worse than being able to play the Yaz flute?
The Yaz flute.
Eat the cat poop. It's from Anchorman. Sorry. You both looked at me
We're like, no.
Yeah.
We're not getting this.
A lot of the time I'm like, is this an Anchorman reference or is this just Joey?
Yeah. That's most of my life.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So basically, I would just say, go play Pokemon. That's fine. That's the moral of the story.
Yeah,
really.
I think that's the moral of the story.
Yeah, catch them all.
If you could pick a different thing to imprint on, what would it be? Like visual.
Oh, do you have an answer? Oh no.
Quick, just
if
you had to pick something right now.
Dogs.
What? Dogs?
Yeah, I just like dogs.
I would choose like the Chinese language or like Mandarin Chinese.
Cool, you're better than me again. That's a great answer.
Like, I know everything about all of the dog breeds.
Yeah, which I already basically do, so I'm just redundant. What's
you know
your answer?
Most things. Yeah,
I would pick fish.
Ooh.
Okay, so I'm the one out. I get it, Alex Contel.
Foods.
All of the foods.
All of the foods.
Yeah. A very Spanish answer.
Including recipes.
Ooh.
Pokemon or foods, whatever.
No, eat Pokemon.
No, Pokemon are. It took a turn.
And we're back.
Part harmony on that.
Yeah, you asked for a three-part harmony.
I know,
and you just
but
didn't contribute.
It took a second.
It was a two-part harmony. We didn't get the cannon.
We kept changing.
Row,
okay.
Row your boat back home. All right, Hannah.
Take it away.
I live in Brooklyn, and I commute to work.
Congratulations.
Oh, my God.
I made it. And I commute to work in Manhattan every day. And I lived off of an express train, which, for those unfamiliar, I don't know how international this audience is.
We have Australian listeners.
Do you know we have listeners on every continent but Antarctica?
Ooh. Someone get someone to listen in Antarctica.
Yeah, you got to get over
there. We got to work on this. And so I take an express train, but sometimes it goes local, so it doesn't skip the stops, and I'll sometimes have to stop at stops that I don't normally stop at. And
stop.
And this is something that's been weighing heavily on my mind. And it comes up every time I go local, and 9 times out of 10, this, don't quote me on this statistic. It's just
made up completely.
It's just real.
It's just how I feel.
Just accept it.
And a woman gets on the train and they smell like a bundle of sticks. I want to understand why this is a trend in perfumery and human smells. I don't know, but it's, I guess more people would be upset about bad smells, but I just want to know, why do we all smell like sticks now?
The answer is a new trend in fitness where you run through a thicket every morning, a briar patch, a bramble, depending on your fragrance choice.
But I also wonder, is this part, because we live in a very, you know, busy city and we don't get outdoors enough, like, is this some like cry for the outdoors? Like, is this a cry for help? Like,
can we
this...
just say, what are you talking about when you're saying they smell like sticks?
They smell like sticks.
I don't sniffing sticks. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's, I think it's of the like sandalwood, musk, like
cedar,
pine,
verdant kind of a.
It's almost like
Lady Lumberjack.
It's what? Almost like a pushback against like Chanel No. 5, I think.
Yeah.
Where people don't want to smell super floral or super. I think it's even. It could even push back on gender, because now everything is pretty gender neutral. You go into most perfume shops, it's not separated. You just kind of pick a smell and you go.
Mm-hmm.
So I think.
I mean, my first response was the cry for nature type of idea, because it, you know, we don't get outside, and I feel like, you know, increasingly in sort of what the left sort of orients, the left side of the political spectrum orients towards in questions of purity is this, like, we do food purity mm-hmm. on the left side, and they tend to do moral purity on the right side of the political spectrum. Jonathan Haidt talks a lot about this, where purity tests on left-leaning places go into food, organic food, like those types of
farm
things.
To table.
Yeah, like what we put in and on our body. And I think that response of New York City, which is a very like left-leaning city, most major cities in the US are, that there's sort of this orientation, right? Like the purity test of putting something in quotes natural on your body. And I don't know whether the perfumes that those women that you're seeing are using are purity tests, but even in like the location where you're starting to see it on your train, like if you're
absolutely.
From the city, it's like, it's starting in Clinton Hill.
Yeah.
It is like a place that is sort of more, I think, attuned to those.
Yeah,
like
it's CSAs.
Organic farms.
Farmers market. Yeah. Like it's a thing. Reusable bags.
But then what do we think possesses us to make ourselves that? Like, why do I want to smell like the types of food that I eat?
I want to smell like Gwyneth Paltrow's soul.
Like a little bit of turmeric with a
empty?
Splash of unfortunate. Well, let's not go there.
Hungry? I think that's the name of my fragrance. No, I that was like my first response. But I think some of the other questions that you're asking or that Jess was asking are sort of interesting, of like pushbacks on gender and that you don't have to conform to a narrow band of fragrances, like these ones are for you and these ones
yeah.
are for him or whatever.
I'll even correct myself. It's not even just women. It's anyone that yeah. like I think takes their appearance and their smell
seriously.
Takes that, not even seriously, but just like they're considerate of it. And
yeah.
So,
as part of their brand.
Yeah. And it, I guess, oh God, is this part of the personal brand?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I just wonder if that, like, why? And then also, what's next? What are we going to smell like?
Well, I also think, to give a little color to, like, where we're at right now, this makes me think of the one and more recent new product release from Aesop, the skincare brand. They have this scent called, I can't even pronounce it because the letters are H-W-Y-L. So whatever sound you think that makes.
H-W-Y-L.
Hual.
Yeah.
Hual.
Hual. We'll have to go into a store one of these days to ask them how it's pronounced. And here's the description. A stirring fragrance reminiscent of a Japanese forest. Smoky notes descend into subtle spice and dark green earthy accords. And yeah.
Ooh, nice use of accords.
But like
earthy accords.
But like this is what you're talking about,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I want to smell
it's that smell.
I want to smell like a UN conference that took place under a soil pile. An earthy accord.
But I like where could we possibly go from there?
How do we start to smell like tech? Like how do we
You smell like a little bit of ozone and burning plastic.
Like Tesla.
What does Tesla smell like?
What's the smell of Tesla?
Oh, okay. So can I do a little side thing on smells? Because y'all know I'm really into sensory things.
Smells like engineers.
So you. Actually, they're in for a scent rebranding moment, right? Like technology. It brings up a really valid point. But it's also interesting because we just generally lack vocab dedicated to smells.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have vocabulary for taste, but we almost translate those words and other like visual words we borrow words from other senses to describe smells. Have you heard of this guy Septimus Pius?
Nope.
This dude.
Is he a transformer?
Yeah.
Sounds
Septimus
so like
Pius.
No. He tried to create words for smells by creating analogies with music. That's why we have the words like notes to describe, like this guy is basically the reason that we started doing that, but he went like a little overboard and he created a scale that like each note would represent a specific smell type. It's this whole crazy thing. And I mean, that was sort of a while ago that this guy came up with that. But like what it sounds like to me is like there's new ground for not only coming up with new types of smells, but also like I don't even know what Aesop's talking about. Like,
right.
How can we give words to describe what the future of smell looks like?
Is this a copywriter out of words? And that's how they've run out of floral notes. They've run out of like masculine notes. They've run out of feminine notes. Like,
they went into geopolitical accords.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
no, I mean, there is the interesting part about this from like the neuroscience perspective. To bring it back to the first discussion, is that your olfactory bulb, which is sort of like the area that your scent starts before you sort of have like the cognitive interaction, like the actual sensory organ up in your sinus region, is far more sensitive than your sense of taste is, potentially even than your sense of vision is. In fact, there are theories that like, it is operating on like a quantum scale. Like it's sort of like a quantum computer that, you know, and when you go into other animals, it get, you know, like a bloodhound can distinguish every individual human being on the planet based on the smell of their DNA effectively. And so like we have this really powerful sense, like we can smell like 5 parts per million of a certain type of compound and be able to tell that it's going to be raining. But then we don't have the language associated with it, which is like a really interesting concept. So when we just say like, oh, it smells so bad, we're not like, and maybe part of it is like our obsession with like idioms to like not talk about things. Like we're not like, oh, it smells like cow dung, a baby fart, and a fish head in there. Don't go in. You know, like we're not
like that's something you've actually said to your wife. Yeah.
No, but I think like there is like that side of the spectrum, like the bad side where we're sort of not making associations, or we just say, like, instead of saying, like, it smells, you know, stinkless.
Well, exactly. I mean, even in your question, Hannah, it's people smelling like sticks. We're using sticks to be the replacement for what it is that people smell like right now. Right. And
can you pull up the scent wheel real quick?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the scent wheel?
No.
You've seen like a flavor wheel, right? Like if you've ever gone to like a wine tasting or something like that, they have it.
Or like the feelings wheel.
Yeah. Yes.
That's my favorite.
It's oftentimes used in wine to help you describe the things that you're smelling and or experiencing with a wine.
And like
there are so many versions of this though. Like it really, there's so many. It gets really crazy.
It starts to tell you like the camps, but when we're not saying like, that smells like a mallard bread crust or a sultry. Oh, this is actually the flavor one.
Oh, sorry. I led you astray.
Dry woods. Like, even this, like, oriental is a region.
That's
floral,
not a smell.
Oriental,
that's
soft
actually,
oriental.
Actually, it brings
green
up
green water.
A valid point. There.
What does water smell like?
Well,
water,
depends where you are. But some airline or hotel brand recently gave as souvenirs, or maybe it was a cruise line, as souvenirs, it was bottled up scents from that place. So like as a way to remember that experience that you had, you could have the bottled up version of XYZ, which might be very difficult to recreate.
A bottle of air?
This is no, it must have been a scent created with things from that place to try and recreate it.
I'm just imagining someone on a cruise ship and it is their job to like bottle air bottle. For like 2,000 people.
Yeah, the smell of New York might be.
Well, the interesting part
unique.
Too is that smells are like really complex to that point, or like the smell of the Orient in this particular case is based on the vegetation of that area, the amount of rain, like the bacteria in the soil and the speed with which things decompose and the amount of circulation, the amount of sun, like there's so many compounds in the air that create such a complex mixture that you're saying like it smells like Hong Kong, right? Like that's the only place where you know that particular mixture of smells exists, or you know it smells like St. Thomas, right? Like I went to, Ben got married in St. Thomas in like 10 years ago or whenever it was. And I went there and it was so fragrant. Like the air was just so fragrant. And I was like, what is that smell? And the people there were just like, it's just what it smells like. I don't know. It's just like the trees over there and some of those sticks over there. And like we're next to the ocean.
The sticks.
Yeah.
But I think that's what it must be, right? Like if now we just have, and maybe I'm saying this because I live in New York, but anytime I go home, even to the suburbs of Philly, I'm like, wow. It smells so good here, and it isn't a thing that we have all the time. You know, maybe we all smell like sticks because it's harder to find nowadays.
Yeah, it's also like your memory is so tied to your sense of smell. Like there's a really strong connection that you're like, it smells like New Hampshire on September 14th, a warm day, about 70 degrees at dusk. Like, you know, like there are sort of like these very distinct connections that you're transported
to. Also wondering if this is an evolution from the like cinnamon scented pine cones and we're moving to bundle of sticks.
Yes.
And then next, I mean, what are we going to replace trees with? Everyone's just going to smell like weed, like hemp. Like, what?
Wow. But that's also still pretty earthy. Is there?
It's just a different kind
of
bundle
evolution.
Of sticks.
It's a different type of stick. Is there another evolution that is? Yeah, I mean, how else what can you draw a smell from? I mean, you were mocking it, you know, the smell of plastic and, you know, data centers humming. But how do we make that into something pleasant?
I don't know. Like, it makes me think of the smell of libraries.
Ooh.
That those have a very specific smell.
My sister would be very into that, I think.
Yeah. So much so that the smell triggers my need to go to the bathroom. Every time I go into a library, not to do anything
just
obscene,
like,
but like
leave the library,
which is tough in New York because a lot of libraries don't have bathrooms.
Okay, I have a wild prognostication. What if it's on the subject of purity? What if it's like clean air is the smell
that people are trying to go for?
Yeah.
Do you think everyone will just smell worse?
No, almost like if the air or the surroundings smell bad, how could we bottle cleanliness?
Yeah, I'm curious if smells are like, if perfumes are increasing or decreasing in total sales. My guess, just based on nothing, just an intuition guess, is that they're decreasing in sales, because I don't feel like I encounter it as often, to the point where my wife and I were out to dinner for our anniversary and a woman sat down at the table next to us and smelled so strong like perfume that it was like interfering with the experience of us just like sitting down and having an interaction, because it was so strong.
Totally.
And I feel like that doesn't happen as often. And so I'm wondering whether it's either going towards subtler smells and mm-hmm. like simpler, more natural in quotes, right? Like not feeling like you were just, you leapt out of, you know, the Sound of Music running through a meadow.
Right.
Into something lighter.
I mean, don't they say like only 50% of the population is wearing deodorant now or something? Like no one wears deodorant anymore.
I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hence the cleanliness smell. Am I right?
Yeah.
Or just maybe we're getting, I think people have always wanted to smell clean, but I think we're moving towards more natural smells and like becoming more accepting of like, sure, you showered, but this is just what you smell like. That's fine.
Yeah. Like, what does Acqua Di Gio smell like? There's not like,
yeah.
I don't, maybe it smells like an ocean or something. Yeah. I don't know. But I do still like the premise at the beginning, just kind of bring it full circle, the idea of sort of more fluidity and freedom in your ability to express yourself via smells, that women can smell like sticks and men can smell like
sticks,
fragrant meadows
rose.
Or sticks.
Actually, roses are a very popular scent in men's fragrance.
Flonase smells like roses. That's where we're gonna leave it. Flonase, Antonio Banderas, roses. You're
every
welcome.
Time, yeah. For some reason, when we bring up smell, we just can't help but like talk about his bee stint.
Yeah, we're gonna record Alex doing an Antonio Banderas imitation right after this. Insert it now.
Do you have to sneeze? Hold your nose.
Why are you doing an American accent?
It might be a dangerous rose. I can't do a Spanish accent that I already have.
You're banned from Spain now. Critical Nonsense is a Sylvain Labs production.
Recorded in MacGyver Studios in New York, New York.
We'd like to thank special guest host Hannah Yeager and executive producer and nitpicker Jess Vander.
We'd also like to thank sound engineer and allergy commercial star Alex Conto.
We'd like to thank designer Nora Mestrich for our cover art and being the early bird.
With production help from Sarah Gilbert, Les Jacobs, and Tony Wong.
And as always, thanks, Elin.
Appreciate you.
Special thanks, of course, as always, to Ash Ketchum for catching them all.
Pokemon.
Do you feel bad for Ash Ketchum just being trapped at the same age forever?
Kind of. Did he ever age?
Kind of into it.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
Him and Pikachu just running through eternity
forever.
Together. What if Pokemon, the world of Pokemon is actually just like purgatory?
Whoa.
That makes me feel a lot better about going to purgatory.
Yeah. We'd also obviously like to thank Chanel. No. Maybe not.
I'd like
Aesop?
To thank every woman riding the train between Nostranav and Hoyt Skimmerhorn.
Own your smells.
Yeah, we'd like to thank Bundles of Sticks
for being so natural.
We'd like to thank Earthy Accords for solving all the earthy problems.
Yeah, definitely. We'd also like to thank science for existing.
We'd like to thank Good Morning America for saying good morning to America. We'd like to thank Wake Up San Francisco for giving us Aunt Becky, and then for USC for taking her away from us.
No, please.
She took herself away.
Yeah.
We'd also like to thank Hannah for her exasperated sighs of enjoyment during this segment of the show. This is our favorite time.
And Jess for her continued improv classes.
And Joey for dealing with me always correcting him literally all
and
the time.
And Jess for dealing with Joey.
Okay, yeah. Let's just thank each other. Yeah.
We'd like to thank the segment of the show that got cut out where Jess told me I was wrong, but I was right.
Whoa, wait, actually, we were both right is what I took away from all of that. But I am the chief corrections department officer, I guess. That's my role.
Yeah. So
thanks.
Oh, we got the harmony right that time.
Thanks. No.
Oh, we could just let sleeping dogs lie. We could have been.
We had it the first time.
So bye. Joey, this week, Joey asks. Special guest Hannah. No.
If she sharted.
Why are we laughing? That's not funny. Joey asked special guest Hannah about